శ్రీ గురుభ్యో నమః హరిః ఓం గణానాం త్వా గణపతిగుం హవామహే కవిం కవీనాముపమశ్రవస్తమం జ్యేష్ఠరాజం బ్రహ్మణాం బ్రహ్మణస్పత ఆనశృణ్వన్నోతిభిః సీద సాదనం శ్రీమహాగణాధిపతయే నమః సదాశివసమారంభాం శంకరాచార్యమ్యమాం అస్మదాచార్యపర్యంతాం వందే గురు పరంపరాం. ఆత్మస్వరూప బృందగణ, ఐఎమ్ వెరీ థ్యాంక్ఫుల్ టు శ్రీ తుల్జీ ఫర్ సేయింగ్ సమ్ నైస్ వర్డ్స్ అబౌట్ మీ. దే ఆర్ ఆల్ నాట్ ఇంపార్టెంట్. ఓన్లీ వన్ ఇంపార్టెంట్ థింగ్ ఈజ్ ద ప్యూరిటీ ఆఫ్ ది హార్ట్ and realization of the self, they alone matter. Anyway, I appreciate what nice things he has said. I came to Canada a few years back, and so from then on I am coming regularly, and so I am very happy for having come here one more time and having met all of you. I came to Canada first time when our friend, beloved Sri Radhakrishna, who is no more, he brought me here. He took me, he took the trouble of bringing me to Canada. Very first time I came to Mississauga, and he had been a great friend to me since so many years. He was attending our long-term course, 6 weeks or 7 weeks course in ashram, in addition to a few other regular courses. And then whenever I come here, he was always in our group. Today he is no more. That is part of life. But then he could be a great example to many of us, maybe to every one of us. Because when he was diagnosed with an advanced state of cancer, which is a terminal illness, and he took that diagnosis with a smile on his face. I have not seen him any time distressed. People are distressed about him, but he is not distressed about himself. He received the information with equanimity, that what we talk about in Vedanta texts all the time. But what we talk in the text, in a lecture, when it comes to real life, we find it always difficult to practice it. To reflect the vision in day-to-day life is not easy. I know it. Even while speaking about it, I know it. I speak a lot about vairagya, non-attachment. But then I know what attachment is and what kind of attachment the family people are caught in, and how tough it is to rise above attachment. All of it is very well known to me. But then I have to speak the Shastra, and so I speak that way only. But I know the difficulty involved in it, and so Sri Radhakrishna stands as a sterling example of a simplicity, a humble heart, equanimity in the face of the direst consequences of a terminal illness. And then he left the mortal frame with an equanimity that could stand as an example to any one of us on any given day. So I thought, I did not plan this, but I thought I will mention it to you. And I would go to the extent of saying that this 1 week's classes of Srimad Bhagavatam are dedicated to his sacred memory. Oh. వంశీ విభూషితకరాత్ నవనీరదాభాత్ పీతాంబరాదరుణబింబఫలాధరోష్ఠాత్ పూర్ణేందుసుందరముఖాదరవిందనేత్రాత్ కృష్ణాత్ పరం కిమపి తత్వమహం నజానే. మృషాధర్మస్య భార్యాసీత్ దంభం మాయాంచ శత్రుహన్ అసూత మిథునం తత్ నిరృతే జగృహే ప్రజః. So we were studying Srimad Bhagavatam in a series of talks. In fact, I have not taught Bhagavatam so perseveringly year after year anywhere else except in Canada. I started with the very first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is a Mahapurana, the big Purana, one of the 18, and it has 18,000 verses, very huge Purana, and it runs into 12 volumes, what we call Skandha, and it is, among all the 18 Puranas, it is the most popular Purana. Many people in India, majority of the Hindus, don't know much about all the 18 Puranas, because it is such a huge, vast literature in an ancient language, Sanskrit, and only those who have a command over the language of Sanskrit, some command on the language of Sanskrit, can aspire to go through that literature. Even then, they should have plenty of time, then only it will be possible to study any amount of that literature. So, therefore, people choose the best among them. So the societies, the civilizations, they act as the winnowing baskets, kind of. So, when a huge literature is thrown upon the society will decide which has to remain in vogue and which has to go away in time. So it looks like that. Bhagavatam stood the test of time, and it remained in currency in the Hindu society. So much so, the present day Hinduism, or the Hinduism of the present times, the 19th, 20th, 20th centuries, or maybe even 18th, 19th, 20th centuries, the Hinduism is defined by Ramayana, Bharata and Bhagavata. These three define Hinduism. And among these three, Ramayana and Bharata happen to be epics, whereas Bhagavata is the Purana, one among the 18. Ramayana and Bharata are not part of the 18. 18, they are the Puranas. Purana is translated as mythology. So, and this is the essence of Hindu religion. The mythology of Hinduism comes from Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is very, very popular among Hindus in India and outside India also. In places like West Indies and Caribbean islands, etc., and also in other parts of the world where Hinduism is thriving, it is Bhagavatam and Ramayana and Bharata. These are the three. Mainly Bhagavatam, as far as mythology of Hinduism is concerned, it is the Bhagavatam which keeps the religion strong. That is its significance. Also, you see, the glory of Hinduism is that it integrates karma, the rituals, upasana, or bhakti, the mythology aspect of the religion, and the philosophy called jnanam. All the three are beautifully integrated. Generally, if you look at a religious scene, there you find a lot of rituals and also a lot of mythology, but generally philosophy will not be part of religion. And in the West, you can see a lot of hostility between philosophy on one side, karma and bhakti on the other side, constituting what is called religion. So karma and bhakti constitute religion, whereas philosophy constitutes spirituality. And so these two remain separate in many, many situations. But in India, all the three are beautifully integrated. I think Shankara's contribution in that regard is very great. He did not reject the rituals. He has made them systematized and advised to keep away many of them, keep many of them to be kept away, and then adopted some of the rituals called Nitya Karma and Naimittika Karma,
into the scheme of his philosophy, Advaita Vedanta. So Nitya Karma and Naimittika Karma, with the help of Bhagavad Gita, what is called Karma Yoga, that incorporates certain selected rituals, daily rituals, daily duties and occasional duties. Nitya Karma and Naimittika Karma, they are beautifully integrated into the philosophy. And then the mythology also is integrated into the philosophy because the Hindu mythology is based on a lot of symbolism. You see, while studying Purana, a few things must be kept in mind. Otherwise, Puranic study becomes superstitious and sometimes it doesn't inspire much. But if two points are kept in mind, the study of Purana becomes very fulfilling. Puranas are Atishaya Pradhana, Atishayokti Pradhana. Means they are built upon what is called hyperbole. Therefore, whenever you hear something like Rama lived 100,000 years, or Dasaratha ruled 60,000 years, or Swayambhuva Manu was ruling for 5 billion years. So like that you hear. Himalayas were 2,000 yojanas up. So that is how it is described. So the descriptions, they are all entirely based on hyperbole, atishayokti. You have to know that. If you know that, then we understand the poet's license for hyperbole. So just they talk like that in hyperbole. It is like saying, I had been waiting for you for eons. He is waiting for 20 minutes, but he says, I had been waiting for eons. It's a way of expression. So hyperbole is used in a very effective way by poets in many occasions. And so Purana is entirely based on hyperbole. Atishayokta Pradhanam Puranam. So that one has to keep in mind. Otherwise, people will be put off. If they read a few pages, then they won't feel like reading any further. So this is one thing. Secondly, the Puranic stories are highly symbolic. These rishis are great symbologists. And so we have to understand the symbolism that is there in the story. If you don't know the symbolism, then the story looks very odd and it doesn't inspire and it seems like some silly story. The symbolism has to be understood. For example, they talk of churning the milky ocean, the ocean of milk. There is an ocean of milk and they wanted to churn this ocean of milk. Somebody wanted a nectar, ambrosia. So how to get it? Then they were advised, you churn the ocean of milk, you will get nectar by such churning. And so they wanted a churning rod. So they brought the mountain peak of Mandara. And then they wanted the support of, the need of people to churn this ocean. It cannot be done by one person or two persons. Therefore all the devatas and asuras, the demons or ogres, they were all taken into this activity. It is like an event of not just the world, it is the event of all the lokas, the entire Brahmanda, a cosmic event it is. It is not a worldly event even, it's a cosmic event. And in that event the churning is done. And so first came poison, Kala Kota Visha. So, first came poison, most virulent poison, and then came ambrosia, the nectar, and a few other things also came. So, this is the story, and the story continues on and on and on. If you have patience to read this story, it is there in Bhagavatam itself, and so you can read it, it continues on and on. Now, you see, what is this story? When you look at it from the symbolism point of view, it is the most beautiful story, most romantic story. The stories are highly romantic. Sometimes, even in the absence of symbolism, you can enjoy these stories for their romanticism. You see, we should not apply logic in understanding romantic stories. They are not meant to be examined logically, because if you start looking at the story logically, the story becomes redundant in the very first step, because like an ocean of milk. Then I heard one young man asking, does it not get spoiled? Like that, you know, it gets spoiled, our milk gets spoiled. Whereas this ocean of milk, why doesn't it get it spoiled? So the mind goes in that direction. When the symbolism is not appreciated, you end up thinking in those lines. And suppose somebody adds some salt to that ocean of milk, then what will happen? Will it break? Then you have to make paneer. So like that. So that is that the way to think about these stories. So the symbolism has to be understood. The ocean of milk is the human heart. You see, in the human heart, there are saparajastamo gunas, three gunas. Generally, if your heart is pure, it is not invaded by the rajas and tamas a lot. Given, left alone, it is pure sattvic. Human heart is essentially sattvic. And that's why knowledge happens. Sattvic means knowledge. You see a pot, so pot cognition takes place. That is sattva, sattvaguna. If the sattvaguna is not there, even such a simple cognition cannot happen. Therefore, human heart is essentially sattvic. We spoil it with rajas and tamas, but left alone it is sattvic. And so that's why the sattvaguna is represented by white color, rajas by red, and tamas by black. That's why even if you see the devatas, Saraswati wears white sari. Lakshmi silk, kanchi silk red sari. Definitely Lakshmi is a kanchi silk red sari with a big border and all that. Whereas Saraswati, white sari with some simple border. Saraswati, you know. And then Kali, the mother of destruction, she wears black dress. So there is Saturayastamo gunas. These are the gunas, not that they wear those saris and all that. The symbolism. Everywhere it is symbolism. So, Ajamekam Lohita Shukla Krishnam, like that there is a mantra. Red, white and black. White standing for the sattvaguna. That is the milky ocean. The heart is the ocean. Why ocean? Because it can cognize innumerable things. When you come into this world, before leaving this world, how many things we know? Daily we know innumerable things. Just imagine, every cognition is like a wave. Now, how many waves could be in your life? In a given day, how many waves of cognition could be there? Every time you remember a thing, that is a wave of cognition, recognition, whatever. So, it is like an ocean. Endless waves, wave after wave will be coming endlessly. They never stop. And it is sattva, the cognizing faculty, the faculty of knowledge. That's why the human heart is the milky ocean, ocean of milk. That is one symbolism. There is another symbolism also, but we will come to it. So it is the human heart. And then churning the human heart, that milky ocean, ocean of milk, is dhyana, meditation. Meditation is the churning. You watch the mind. And for that you sit straight, keeping the backbone straight. That is the mandara rod. And like that the symbolism goes. When you are doing meditation, initially you do not succeed. You are bound to face periods of frustration and utter disappointment that the meditation is not working. Everybody goes through this stage. And quite a few people drop out also, because the meditation is not working for them. Therefore, so that initial, what they call, yatta dagre vishamiva, పరిణామే అమృతోపమం. దిస్ ఇస్ ఫ్రమ్ గీత. సో ఇన్ ది బిగినింగ్ ఇట్ ఈస్ లైక్ పాయిజన్, బట్ ఇట్స్ ఇఫ్ యూ పెర్సిస్ట్ విత్ ఇట్ అల్టిమేట్లీ యూ విల్ గెయిన్ ది నెక్టర్. దట్ బిగినింగ్ పాయిజన్ ఇస్ ది విషం, ద కాలకూట విషం. అండ్ ఎట్ ద టైమ్ లార్డ్ శివ, యూ జస్ట్ సే ఓ నమ శివాయ, ఓ నమ శివాయ, ఆర్ శివోహం శివోహం, యూ విల్ ఓవర్కమ్ దట్ ఇనీషియల్ డిసప్పాయింట్మెంట్స్ ఆఫ్ మెడిటేషన్ ఎట్సెట్రా. ఫైనల్లీ యూ విల్ గెయిన్ యువర్ ఫుల్నెస్, యూ విల్ డిస్కవర్ యువర్ ఫుల్నెస్. యు ఆర్ ద ఫుల్నెస్, పూర్ణ, దట్ యూ డిస్కవర్. అండ్ ఇన్ దట్ డిస్కవరీ ది లైఫ్ బికమ్స్ ఎ జాయ్, ఇస్ వాట్ వీ కాల్ జీవన్ ముక్తి, ఫ్రీడమ్ ఫ్రమ్ ది బాండేజ్ ఆఫ్ సంసార. దట్ ఫ్రీడమ్ అండ్ దట్ రీజన్లెస్ జాయ్, యూ డోంట్ నీడ్ ఎ రీజన్ టు బి జాయస్, బికాస్ జాయ్ ఆర్ హ్యాపీనెస్ హ్యాపన్స్ టు బి యువర్ వెరీ ఎసెన్షియల్ నేచర్. సో దట్ ఈస్ ది అమృతం. అమృతం ఈజ్ నాట్ ఎ లిక్విడ్. సో దట్ ఈస్ ది అమృతం. దిస్ అమృతం ఈజ్ క్రియేటెడ్ బై చర్నింగ్. దట్ ఈస్ మెడిటేషన్. సో దట్ ఈస్ ది స్టోరీ. ఇఫ్ యూ అండర్స్టాండ్ దిస్ అండ్ దెన్ రాక్షసాస్ యాజ్ వెల్ యాజ్ దేవతాస్, దేవతాస్ ద గాడ్స్ యాజ్ వెల్ యాజ్ ద డీమన్స్, ద గుడ్ థాట్స్ యాజ్ వెల్ యాజ్ ది బ్యాడ్ థాట్స్. So, you feel like doing meditation, oh, I failed to do meditation yesterday, today I should do it without fail. That is Devata. No, no, this meditation anyway, it doesn't work, let us go to the club. That is Asura. That thought is Asura. So, the meditators, they have to deal with both kinds of thoughts. Certain thoughts favorable for the pursuit and certain other thoughts are really obstacles for the pursuit. These are the devatas and asuras. So this way, as you understand the symbology associated with these Puranic stories, the stories come alive and they could be very, very inspiring also. So this is how you have to read a Purana. Two things I told. One, hyperbole is very common for Puranas. That should not put you off. Secondly, you should have some idea of symbolism, and it is very well recognized and it is very well explained by various rishis. In Bhagavatam itself, in the 12th skandha, Dvadasha skandha, an elaborate symbolism is presented. For all the descriptions that were given till then, an elaborate symbolism is presented. Why Vishnu has four hands? Symbolism. Because the purusharthas are four. Moksha, Dharma, Artha, Kama. Therefore, four hands. What is the Shankha, the conch that Vishnu holds? It is the Omkara, it stands for Omkara. The Shankha stands for Om. Because Shankha stands for the sound, and that sound is the primordial sound of the creation, namely Om. Shankha stands for that. The Chakra, the discus, stands for the time, cyclic time. Like this, what is Kaustubha Manikyam? The gemstone, the necklace made of the Kaustubha gemstone. What is its symbolism? What is the divine eagle, the Garutman? Everything is very beautifully explained in the Bhagavatam, 12th Skandha. So just I mentioned it to you, to show you the importance of symbolism in the Puranic wisdom, in the Puranic narratives. And so when you understand the spirit of those stories, then read those stories. They are very inspiring. So these stories have these qualities. One is very romantic stories, and therefore if you can keep the logical mind aside, you can enjoy the romanticism of these stories. And then, secondly, they are very inspiring as a symbolic because of their symbolism. That is the second aspect of the Puranic story. The third is, the stories contain in the narrative, as part of the narrative, a lot of Vedantic wisdom. So much so, Bhagavata becomes a Purana, but more than a Purana, it becomes an encyclopedia of Vedantic wisdom. If you want to study Vedanta, as it is presented in the context of an interesting, romantic, inspiring story, as part of such a story. So, Bhagavatam is the best example. There also they give the example, you see, suppose Vairagya has to be taught, Vairagyam. If the people are very much attached to the world, which is the case normally, any description of Vairagya could be very unsettling. In fact, sometimes in the classes, when Vairagya is being talked about, people could not contain their frustration and they get up and ask, why so much, why not, why Gruhasthas, can't we study Vedanta without so much Vairagya? Like that, they get frustrated and they express the frustration. And in the satsanga questions also you can see the frustration. That the Vairagya description is very much unsettling. So, for example, recently in one satsanga, I was discussing about Vairagya as part of a text. So, Patanjali's Yoga Darshana I was teaching, where Vairagya is highly presented in a big way. And so I was describing all that, and one of these students, he could not control his annoyance. So he asked me, why not we have some pleasure, what is wrong with it? Why not make a lot of money and enjoy things? Why do you talk all the time about Vairagya? Then I told him, you have come to a wrong place. You should have joined a seminar given by Donald Trump. So Patanjali's Yoga Darshana is a wrong place for you. Here we do not dispense worldliness. We dispense Vairagya only. You should be mentally prepared for that. That is what reply I gave. So, fortunately the question is written on a piece of paper, therefore it is impersonal now. The persons are not involved. That is a great advantage. Therefore, people who are very devoted to the world, who are steeped in the worldliness, for such people, the description of Vairagya, non-attachment, etc. becomes very disconcerting. It happens like that. But the same Vairagya presented in the context of a Bhagavatam story could be not so unsettling, because the story acts as a soothing, it provides a soothing atmosphere, and slowly the teaching is incorporated along with a nice story. This is how it is done. Like Ayurvedic medicines are given along with honey. Ayurveda means honey. In India it is not honey. It is an artificial thing. It is made from gourd. It is not honey. But still it is sold as honey and it is used as honey. Honey is not the medicine. Medicine is something else. In the childhood we used to have some of this Ayurvedic medicine in the village, etc. So for giving, medicine is very bitter. Ayurvedic medicine means bitter, very bitter. The powder is very bitter. But, so my mother used to put this powder in a little honey and mix it well and then impart that thing. We used to enjoy the medicine. We used to look forward to it. But then it was bitter also. So we used to bear with that bitterness because of our greed for that honey. So, that is what we call anupanam. In Ayurvedic medicines, it is called anupanam. Either honey or buttermilk. They say, take this medicine with buttermilk. You try it without buttermilk, it will get stuck in the throat. But with buttermilk, that bitter powder, it will go down. So, these stories, they are comparable to what we call anupana. Kindly please note, here lot of space is there. Plenty of space. Don't get the impression space is less. Plenty of space. That chair is also lying vacant. It can be occupied. Yeah, please come. And make yourself comfortable. Don't sit on the floor, you sit on some mat kind of thing. Yeah, you can use that also as a mat. Yeah. Therefore, the story has that beauty. It helps to convey a message which could be otherwise difficult. So, suppose a discourse on Vairagya could be a little inconvenient and difficult, whereas a Puranic story in which the Vairagya is highlighted through a character of two, and the opposite of Vairagya, that is the Raga, attachment and worldliness, that is also presented through another character, like a hero villain. Hero represents all the worthy qualities and villain represents all the negative qualities. And now you have a story going around it. And finally the hero wins. Hero should win. Otherwise, that sends a very wrong message. The human heart is aspiring for dharma, because dharma means righteousness that alone keeps the societies moving forward smoothly. If righteousness is missing, the police force cannot implement dharma effectively. There is some dharma in our hearts to begin with. Therefore, the police just watches and then we remain in the right path. So the dharma must be there. If dharma is missing, police cannot make it happen. Police becomes redundant. Police functions effectively only when the society is essentially law-abiding. And so, therefore, the dharma structure in the hearts of people should not be disturbed. It should be left alone. Suppose in the battlefield, Dharmaraja loses and Duryodhana wins. It is even unthinkable. Whatever may be the difficulties, Dharmaraja should prevail. So, therefore hero should win. Always hero should win. So that will be very inspiring. But hero faces all the difficulties, so that becomes inspiring too. And therefore, this is how the stories help to keep the social morale and the social ethos in place. They can be very inspiring. In that respect, the Hinduism as a dharma, it is kept alive by these stories, as much as its philosophy. And you see, today Hinduism is more than a religion. It is a global way of life, and it has gone global now. So now it is appreciated all over the world. The philosophy makes Hinduism universal. It is the philosophy that makes the Hinduism universal, not rituals. You cannot take rituals and you cannot put rituals in the front and make it universal. The rituals make it certainly limited to a group of people only. Because rituals cannot attract everyone. Only those who love rituals, they will go near. All others keep at a distance. The mythology also could be like that, unless it could be very inspiring and very helpful in spreading the message of philosophy. It is ultimately the philosophy, the Vedanta, that makes Hinduism global. So, Bhagavata Purana, it is as universal as Hinduism itself, because it incorporates a lot of philosophy in it along with beautiful stories. And for this week, we have selected a story. Upakhyanam means a story, small story. Upa is a small, near. Anyway, upakhyana is one word. It means a story. Now, it need not be a very elaborate story. Generally, these stories are not very elaborate. They can be called short stories. But the text may not be very short, because as part of this story, a lot of philosophy is incorporated. Lot of values are presented. Lot of Vedanta is taught as part of this story. That's why it looks big. But otherwise, the story itself is very small. The story of Dhruva, that is the topic. You see, in Kannada, as we are doing these classes year after year, session after session, yearly twice. So we have covered a lot of ground. In fact, we have covered the first three skandhas verse by verse. Kapila Devahuti Samvada is the end of the third skandha. We have covered it in 3-4 sessions very elaborately without compromising on any single verse. And then we have done, after that, so we have done in a given session of 5 days, Gajendra Moksha, another story. Now comes this story, the story of Dhruva. This I wish to complete in these 7 days, including today. In 7 classes, it should come to a conclusion. And after that, if the enthusiasm of the people for Bhagavata remains sustained, then we can take up another upakhyana, like for example, Jada Bharata Rahugana Samvada. Like Kapila Devahuta Samvada, like that there is another Jada Bharata Rahugana Samvada. I am preparing your minds for the future sessions also in a way. So that could be very elaborate, like Kapila Devahuta Samvada again. That kind of a samvada it is. So that could take not less than 2 or 3 sessions. But it incorporates a lot of Vedantic wisdom as part of that story. A very interesting story also. It has lots of this ethos, social ethos, and morality, all those things, values. In addition to that, lot of Vedanta. So this is how these classes are being structured all these years. Now we are with Dhruvopakhyanam. Now what I have done, I have taken the original, which is even more elaborate than what you have in your hand, and I have abridged it to some extent, so that the essence is taken. The very lengthy descriptions are dropped out, and the message is brought out. The Vedantic description is not dropped out, but only the lengthy descriptions of the story part are made short. That is how you have a meaningful abridgment of that text, that section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, so with you. What I would advise you is, get hold of a copy. You have already a copy. In case you don't have a copy, by tomorrow you manage to get a copy. Now that copies are there, you can make copies. So, and get hold of a copy, and you stay with the text while I describe the text day after day for 7 days. So, let us hope it will keep us going for all the 7 days. But suppose it is completed even before 7 days, we will plan something else. So we have to start now. Therefore, it should keep us going for 7 days. And so I would advise you, it will be nice if you stay with the text. If you give up on the text, then it becomes it acquires the quality of what is called entertainment, what we call spiritual entertainment. So it is less of a study, more of a spiritual entertainment, not like worldly entertainment, but spiritual entertainment. That may not be of much help. Whereas, you discover a student in yourself, age has no relevance. You be like a student and then apply yourself to the text. That will be a nice way of studying a section from the Purana in this context. But having said that, let me warn you, the Sanskrit could be a little difficult. If you don't have any Sanskrit knowledge, then it will not be difficult. Because what will be difficult then? There is no difficulty at all. But if you know a little Sanskrit, then you may find the Sanskrit difficult. Doesn't matter. So, it begins with what is called Adharma Vamshavalihi. I have dropped the first verse and put the second verse there. It's okay. The very beginning, the 3 verses, 2, 3, and 4, they describe what is called the lineage of Adharma. We are in the middle of the Bhagavatam, you know. Kapila Deva Huti Samvada, that was completed in the earlier session before Gajendra Moksha, that gave the lineage of dharma. And therefore, having given the lineage of dharma, righteousness, it is only appropriate, or in the fitness of things, that the lineage of adharma is also given, so that we now know what is to be adopted in life and what is to be kept away from life. So these Puranas or these Vedantic texts, they are not some treatises to be enjoyed in an intellectual way. That is not the goal of that. That will be there, but that is not the goal. The Purana or the Vedantic message that comes out of it is like a mirror of words, and it really acts like a mirror. If we have an open mind, the message acts like a mirror, the words act like a mirror. They give us an opportunity to look into our own face. So, and then suppose our face appears bright in this mirror of words, then that makes us feel very good. And suppose the face may appear a little dirty also here and there, then that gives an opportunity to improve ourselves. So we have to look at it like that. It is not that somebody is presenting something and so we listen and then disperse. An evening well spent. So it should not be just left at that. That it is, no doubt. But it is not about gaining some information. You have all the information that you need, adding some more information into this storehouse called intellect. It doesn't make a big difference. People have this quality called acquisitiveness. So, you go on acquiring things, physical things. So, make a big home to begin with, and then fill it with all kinds of things. Acquisitiveness. And then acquire books. Suppose now you get an enthusiasm for books, so acquire books. Suppose you have enthusiasm for spiritual literature, then acquire books of that kind. Yoga, okay, let us get all kinds of yoga books, this book, that book, a variety of yoga mats, and yoga props, so many things you will be there. Yoga shopping it is. You have to do yoga, not yoga shopping. So human mind functions like that, that the acquisitiveness is there. And therefore, the same thing happens at the level of the mind also, intellect. So, what we do, we acquire things at the level of the intellect. Go on filling the intellect with more and more Vedantic stuff. So, I have done, I have learnt that Upanishad, I have studied this Gita, I have studied that Prakarana, now I am studying Bhagavatam. So, it adds to the list of things that I have already studied. That kind of acquisitiveness at the level of intellect, it happens in our lives. Without our noticing it happens. If you are not alert, that is what we are doing. That's how it happens. So, it has some value in that level also, but we have to raise above that and use the opportunity not as intellectual acquisitiveness, but as looking at our own face. Means looking at our own life in the mirror of words. That will be very useful. That is the way Shravanam has to be done. First, we should have an open mind, very open mind. How to make the mind open? There is one simple thing. You make the mind empty. Just drop all pre-notions, fixations, ideas. All the things that you have acquired till now, keep them suspended. They won't go anywhere. They will be with you only. But now they are all set aside. The mind becomes empty. Now once it becomes empty, it becomes open. That is one thing. Secondly, I know that should not be there. I know. Even really you may be knowing, but still. You may be knowing, but still. That I know attitude should not be there. Then such a mind becomes very receptive. And also, you use the words as an error, then that becomes a transformative occasion that brings in that inner transformation. So that is the way we have to approach these teachings. Now, adharma vamshavalihi. You see, in adharma, life of wrong conduct, so you join that flow or that stream at some point, then we will be going from one stage to the other. So it will be going along like that. So that lineage of adharma, we have to be very cautious about it. We should be very wary about it. So very circumspect. Oh my goodness. So this aspect, if it enters into my life, that leads to the next stage, from there to the third stage, like that the lot of adharma has already entered into our life. It is like the Ganga is flowing. Just by the side of the Ganga, a huge sewage canal is also flowing. Both are flowing. So you may say, oh, they don't keep properly, the government is sleeping. That doesn't help, you know. That only adds to the frustration. What you have to do is, okay, government, what it has to do, it will do, or it is doing, or whatever. And people, civic sense, that kind of frustration is not the point. The point is, you keep away from that dirty flow. And you apply yourself to the sacred flow. That is all we have to do. So, similarly, here also, we understand the adharma vamshavali correctly, fully. And having understood it, we keep away from that flow. And we apply ourselves to the dharma flow, as it is described in the life of Shatarupa, Devahuti and Kardama, that story of Devahuti. So Kapila Devahuti Samvada. So we have to apply ourselves to that lineage of dharma and avoid this lineage. Sometimes it is we should be more informed about adharma than dharma. Violation of laws, this is how the law is violated. That information must be with us so that we don't violate the law. So, this is the purpose of describing the adharma vamshavalihi. It is mainly meant for making the mind very pure. There was this gentleman called Adharmaha, personification, you know. Dharmaha is a gentleman. Adharmaha is another gentleman. And this Adharma, he got married to Mrusha, a lady. So, the Mrusha means falsehood, falsity. That is the name of the lady. And therefore, this gentleman called Adharma is married to Mrusha Devi. Mrusha Madam is married to Mrusha Madam. Like we have in Valdukya, Maya Madam. So similarly here, it is Mrusha Madam. And when Adharma is married to Mrusha Madam, they got a son and a daughter. So Mrusha Adharmasya Bharyasit Dambham Mayanchi Shatruhan Asuta Mithunam. So they have two children. And the first child is a boy. His name is Dambhaha. Dambhaha means hypocrisy. In fact, the ostentatiousness, you are very ostentatious in your dress, any kind of dress. Even a sadhu could be very ostentatious in his dress. He tries to impress people with the dress. Or he is a devotee, he is attached to a certain kind of a quality dress and all that. He need not be a grihastha only. So grihasthas, of course, they give extraordinary significance. They are likely to give, not all, extraordinary significance for outward appearance. So that is called dambha. That is ostentatiousness. And you are ostentatious and very showy in rituals and also in devotion to Ishvara. You make it very showy. That is also dambha. Therefore, people are misled quite often. They are not. Especially in the field of religion,
So they give a lot of importance for the show. You see, they do some charity and they see to it that their name is presented there prominently. So that amounts to Dambha. So this way, all ostentatiousness is Dambha. Suppose you do dharma, some good action, and try to make yourself popular on that basis, that amounts to Dambha. So very tough this Dambha is, because in our lives some Dambha could be there. Suppose I put Tilakam to impress people, then that becomes Dambha. So this Dambha is the son of Murusha Madam, married to Adharma gentleman. And then they have a daughter also. Her name is Maya. Cheating. Maya is cheating. And now this Maya is married to a gentleman called Niruruti. Niruruti Jagruhe Aprajaha. Okay. It is not married. He adopted. He the Aprajaha. He doesn't have children. This Niruruti. Niruruti means Dr. Evil. Dr. Evil. You know, there is a Dr. Evil. Somewhere I have heard a Dr. Evil. That is Niruruti. Sanskrit is Niruruti is evil. And this Dr. Evil, he has no children. And now he wanted to adopt a child. This is adoption is an Indian thing it is. I don't know how. They do it elsewhere also. But in India it is highly religious connotations it has. So, he adopted these two children. Anyway, he adopted some of the children here, one of them he had adopted. And then this Maya Madam is married to Niruruti. Yeah. Niruruti, he adopted Dambha and married Maya. Don't worry about the relationships and all that. So he becomes brother-in-law. Don't look at it like that. So don't go so much into relationship and all that. This is about Adhar, the lineage of Adharma. So the Niruruti, Dr. Evil, is married to the Maya Madam. Annatayo samabhavallobhaha nikrutishya mahamate. When Dr. Evil is married to Maya Madam, they have two children now. One of them is lobhaha, means greed. Lobhaha is greed. Means people are very greedy. That is obvious, you know. People are always greedy. They have money and they want a lot more. And they say, when we make when we double the money, some of it we will do for charity. So that is how they start justifying it. So, and in fact that becomes a justification also. And if I am the one who gets all that charity, I will encourage it also. So it all works in a very peculiar way. All of this is samsara only. It looks like a lot of dharma. Some punyam could be there. And that punyam can take the guy to heaven after death. But that is not what we are talking about, you know. We are not talking about punyam. We are talking about the self-realization. That is the goal. Punyam is not the goal. And these issues are there. So greed and competitive acquisitiveness, competition, all of that comes under lobha. And then nikrutishcha mahamate. Nikruti is krupanata, means wretchedness. What is the wretchedness? The person is totally devoted to the sense pleasures, very worldly person, and he doesn't pay any attention to what is called self-knowledge. And those higher values of life have no place in his thinking. So that is the krupana. So that is also the child of despair. Then tabhyam krodhascha himsacha yadurukti svasa kalihi. This lobha, he has two children. Again a son and daughter. The greed guy, Mr. Greed, has two children.
One of them is krodha, anger. And the other is himsa. You see, krodha and himsa. Himsa is injury, causing injury. So violence, himsa is violence. Ahimsa is non-violence. So, from lobha, once you have greed, when a person is greed, it leads to anger. Because when people are not agreeable to him, because he is very greedy. Suppose a miserly person is there. He is always angry with his wife and children also. For him, the wife and children also appear as enemies because they do not support his miserliness. Generally, when you have a miserly guy, he alone is miserly. Everybody else are spendthrift. It happens like that. And therefore, there is always a conflict between him and other members of the family. Always a conflict will be there. And so, lobha, greed, leads to anger, krodhaha. Krodhaha is a very bad thing. You see, some people justify anger again, saying that you need to be angry, otherwise you cannot control all these people. It is called control issue. We want to control people. You see, there is only one thing to be controlled, that is our mind. We need not control anybody else. You have to control your mind. You have to control your senses. You have to control your ego. There, the control has to be applied. Anywhere else, you need not control anything. People want to control family members. I'm not talking about discipline of some kids, etc. I'm talking about the control issues which people have. Generally, they have control issues. They want to control others. Wife wants to control husband and vice versa. The parents want to control their children and children don't want it. So, like that, the control issue. Even the grandparents enter into conflict. They become victims of conflict. When they try to control their grandchildren, they try to impart some of the values known to them to the grandchildren. All good-meaning people only. But the generation gap will be there. The grandchildren would not look at life the way grandparents look at life. The vision itself is altogether different. And therefore conflicts arise. Anyway, so that greed and also attachment associated with greed, it leads to frustration and anger. And frustration and anger are very toxic to the mind, to the heart. They do not solve any problem. In frustration and anger, you will not be able to solve anything. Whom you want to control, you will not be able to control because of frustration and anger. In this world, till today, nobody has accomplished anything because of frustration and anger. That is the truth. Therefore, getting frustrated and angry doesn't help. Even in a worldly way, it doesn't help. Anyway, krodhaha. Once anger is there, himsa. Himsa could be mental, speech-wise himsa could be there, verbal and physical. So, mentally, we feel, oh, that person should go to, should perish. He is not worth succeeding in life. He should perish. Like that we feel. That is a mental himsa. So, that kind of mental himsa, it goes a lot in people's lives. Sometimes, quite often it is justified also. He is a very evil person. He should perish. Like that people feel. They feel strongly in the mind. They may not say it outside because it is not agreeable in the society to pass such harsh remarks against others. Therefore, they won't say it. But in their heart of hearts, they feel bad. They feel that the other person should come to grief. That is mental violence. And then verbal. Verbal is there. A lot of verbal violence we see. They talk very harsh words. In fact, they aim arrows-like words. And they use very punchy words that act like arrows and pierce the heart of the adversary, and it should cause maximum hurt to the other person. That kind of language is used. Very foul language, very hurting language is used. Sometimes they abuse the lineage also. Your family is like that. Then you say, talk about my family, your family, and their grandparents are also like that, this man says. So like that it goes. So verbal violence. And verbal violence, that is coming now. Duruktau kaliradhatta bhayam mrutyuncha sattama tayoscha mithunanjajne yatana nirayastatha. So anger is there, violence is there. Then it follows durukti. So mental violence you take, himsa. It is immediately followed by foul language, hurting words you speak. That is called duruktihi. And then kalihi, Mr. Kali. Kali, people have some idea about it. That is the Puranic. Kali is Puranic, you know. They assume that there is an evil guy, like Saturn. In Christian mythology you have Saturn. Saturn represents the evil and stands opposed to God. So Saturn seems to be as powerful as God himself. This is the Christian mythology. We have exact replica in the Puranic literature. That is the Kali. Kali. It is also said that we are living in Kali Yuga. If you talk with an elderly person from India, some elderly person, so he will always complain, the world is coming to a very bad pass. Dharma has disappeared from the society. All of this is because of Kali. That is how they say. Did you ever talk with any people like that? They will say. They always say like that. Suppose you talk with a ritual person, person devoted to rituals, karmi, and you just try to know his or her mind. He will tell the society is all gone bad and dharma has disappeared, nobody is doing any pujas, etc., no rituals, they are all going in the wrong direction. They don't wear any outer forms of religion, like hairstyle, marks on the forehead, the particular dress, nobody follows any rules and regulations. They are the rules he knows. And so nobody seems to follow these things. And so the society has come to a very bad pass. And so all of this is Kali. The Kali, that Mr. Kali, who is Mr. Evil, a kind of evil. He is commanding the social life, and therefore there is so much of adharma, corruption, etc. in this society. This is how they describe. And then they are satisfied, because now they have rationally explained the situation. Why there is so much adharma, that they have nicely explained. And so they are satisfied, there is not much to do about it now, because it is all Kali who is doing, you know. So that is how some explanation is given. I am sure you must have come across that kind of description. But here, we are not talking about that is Puranic. In fact, Kali is in human mind. It is not outside. And even time is a mental category. Time is not the watch or the clock. That is not time. Time is what you become conscious of when you see the clock, or when you look at the watch, or when you look at the movement of sun in the horizon. So it must be midday. Like that, it is what you become conscious of. It is not something which is there out. It is something which is projected by the human mind. And hence, time is a mental category. And therefore, Kali is not a property of the time. Time itself is mental. What to speak of Kali? Kali is a mental category. Conflict. Kali means conflict. Kalihi kalahaha. So, suppose in the family, there are constant fights. That is Kali. They are all the time fighting with each other. That is Kali.
There may be an occasional altercation, which is understandable, but a constant conflict, ongoing conflict, is Kali. Therefore, Kali is not some Mr. Evil coming from heavens or hell or etc. and influencing our lives. Kali is in our own heart. So we lose our harmony. We do not pursue harmony as a goal, which we should, really speaking. But when the harmony is missing, so what you have is only conflict. So that is Kali. Kali kalahaha. And so the home may be a place of Kali when there is conflict is going on. Or in the society, there is a conflict all the time. All the time conflict. You can see such a conflict-ridden society, social situation in some of the Asiatic societies. I am giving example from far away so that the local example, local people can work out. So, for example, Pakistan as a state, it is a failed state because there is so much conflict within the state. Even in India, it is a democratic state, it is a thriving democracy, thriving economy. So, thank God our forefathers have put some nice foundations, that's why we are thriving that way. But still, there is a lot of conflict in the society. Many Mahatmas really pointed out that this social conflict is very much there. But of parochialism, you don't find that deep parochial attitudes in some of the Western societies. So that is Kali, conflict at the social level and the family level. But then the origin of conflict is the human mind. So that is the human mind. It is you and me who project the conflict. And so the message is obvious that we should keep the conflict away. We should not promote conflict. We should work for harmony. And we should not say anything and we should not do anything that promotes division and conflict. That is the message. But anyway, we are talking of the adharma, and so in the lineage, we have come a lot down in that lineage. So somewhere in that lineage, in the genealogy of adharma, you have Kali, Mr. Kali, same as Mr. Kalaha, same as Mr. Conflict. Now, Duruktau Kaliradhatta Kali Bhayam Mrutyuncha Sattama. When there is conflict, there is bhaya, fear. You see, once you are having a running conflict, you cannot rest in peace. There is always that fear and insecurity will be there. Lot of insecurity. People live in insecurity. You see, you may watch society or social groups. There is a way of watching it. You should be very receptive. Suppose you stand at a busy intersection in one corner on the footpath. And then you drain your mind of all your egoity. Don't be an egoic individual, egoic person. You just remove all this egoity and become like an uninvolved witnessing awareness, space-like. You are not judging anybody. You are not saying anything against anybody. You are not projecting anything from your side. You should not project anything from your side. You should become like clean mirror, space-like awareness. And then watch the people. You will see how much unhappy the people are. You can see the careworn faces. And you can see the insecurity. And then suddenly the traffic stops. And therefore everybody breaks his car, one car behind, one car behind, one car. There is a deep lines of consternation and annoyance on the people's faces. They cannot do anything because the car before him is blocking this car. And that person is entirely unknown to him, but he projects so much
spite and venom. Oh, most useless babies, that's not. He doesn't know how to drive. Why is he finds himself in the traffic like this? Like that, so much spite and venom is there against the other. He is totally unknown to us. You don't even see his face. You are only looking at his back. But still, there could be so much spite. And then intense frustration. You want to fly and go 10 cars ahead, but you cannot do that. Therefore, total helplessness, all that you can see on the people's faces. And people are very unsettled. And then if you watch at the time of 10 o'clock in the morning, when 10 o'clock or 9 o'clock or maybe 8 o'clock here, when it is office goers time, then you look at, you have to watch with a very open mind. Then you can see that everybody is busy, everybody is frustrated, everybody is in a hurry and very insecure. All that you can see in the people's faces. So, the idea is, when we work in the direction of conflict, Kali, so we end up acquiring or picking up a lot of fear and insecurity. And therefore, if you want to remain at peace at home, so that you can pursue your meditation, your sadhana and all that, your studies, etc., then you should keep away from all conflicts. You should not allow conflict to develop. So forgive and put an end to the conflict. If you have to lose something, you better lose and put an end to conflict. Don't allow the conflict to make any progress. So that you may lose some physical things, but you can safeguard your purity of the heart and the harmony and peace. So that is how we should work. Otherwise, we will pick up a lot of conflict, and then from conflict we get fear and insecurity, bhayaha. And then the death, bhayaha mrityuhu. Generally, among all the fears that haunt us, the fear of death is presented as the biggest. It is just waiting there. You see, people, they try to escape. And so, they don't look at death with an objective outlook. Dispassionately look at death. What is death? Death is not away from us. Death is where life is. So inhalation is life and exhalation is death. And once you understand the truth about life and death, you will transcend both. You are beyond both. Life and death do not touch you. So that's why study of Gita and understanding of death, that makes us free from the fear of death. Anyway, if you do not understand death properly, just trying to escape from death, I have a feeling that people, when they run after some occasions, happy occasions, celebrations, and then such social engagements where you tend to lose yourself and merrymaking, you engage in what is called merrymaking, etc. All these are there. These, in most cases, all such human endeavor seems to be originating from that escapism. We escape from the harsh realities of life. And therefore, now weekend has come. Chalo, let us drive away from, People drive away. Away from where? Away from home and away from office. That is escape. They want to escape. Because home is, home is, if it is a happy home, you don't drive away from home. You drive near to home and you try to stay at home. And then if office is your karma kshetra, where you are practicing karma yoga, then you should feel, oh, the week has over, weekend has come, it is an interruption. Okay, let us start it on Monday morning, till then we wait. So it must, you must feel that way. But you look at the human psychology, the weekend is used to practice this escaping. Escapades, they are called. So people are trying to escape. And that's why from this escaping nature, we have what is called Monday morning syndrome. So because how long can you escape? 48 hours is all that you can escape. So you have to come back. So anyway, that bhayaha, insecurity, fear and death, mrityuhu. So we should not escape from the idea of death. We should examine it and try to understand it and then rise above that. Anyway, mrityuhu. Then, yatana narakaha. If you follow this lineage of adharma, the human being is condemned to suffer here in this life. Yatana, to suffer. And then, after death, the human being is further, the individual is further condemned to hell, naraka. The idea is, in Purana, naraka, hell, is described as a place. But then naraka is as much a place as an experience. It's an experience. So, having committed adharma, performed all kinds of wrong actions, we have to pay the bitter price in the form of suffering, physical as well as mental. That is the naraka. So this is the adharma vamshavalihi. I would submit to you, nowhere else in the literature of Sanskrit and Vedanta and Puranas, etc., in any religious or spiritual literature, the adharma vamshavalihi, the lineage of adharma, is described in such good detail. This is that place. And so we have seen most of it. Priyavratottanapadau shatarupapateshitau vasudevasya kalaya rakshayam jagatasthitau. Now we introduce a small part of the story. There was this Swayambhuva Manu. Manu means the progenitor of the human race, the originator of the human race. Human beings are called Manava, the offspring of Manu, Manava. In English also they are called the same, man and woman. Woman is also Manu, M-A-N is there. Also, we are all the offspring of the original human being. The original human being is called Manu. This is Purana, you know. But the idea is very interesting. If you ask anthropologists, they will have some nomenclature. Very interesting. Some Greek and Latin names. Some name, I don't get it really clearly. So, there was a human being. He was our forefather. He was originally in Africa and then migrated to various other, like that, and he is some 10 million years old, or whatever. The anthropologists talk of, and they have a photograph also, an artist rendering. He must have looked like this. Whereas in Purana, we look at it in a slightly better way. May not be as scientific as that, but definitely more romantic than that. There was an originator of human race, and he is Manu. Human race is Manava, Manu. So, his name is Swayambhuva Manu. Why Swayambhuva? Because he is the offspring of Swayambhu. Swayambhu is the creator, Hiranyagarbha. Called Brahma Deva in Puranic literature. So, the name Brahma Deva in Puranas is same as Hiranyagarbha of the Upanishads. The creator, creator, that is the meaning. So, this creator, his son is Manu. And we are all offspring of that Manu. So, he is the Swayambhuva Manu. and his wife is a Shatarupa. That is, we have seen this story. And Swayambhuva Manu and Shatarupa, they had three children, two sons and one daughter. Daughter is Devahuti, married to Kardama Maharshi. And then she gave birth to Kapila Bhagavan, the Kapila Avatara, and all that we have seen, Kapila Devahuti Samvada. Now, two sons are there. They are Priyamvrata and Uttanapada. Priyamvrata story came. Priyamvrata story is part of the Dharma lineage. Dharma lineage. You see the name, Devahuti. So, she surrendered her life to Ishvara. That's why she is called Devahuti. Priyamvrata. Austerity is very lovable to him. He lived a life of austerity very happily. That is Priyamvrata. So, both of them belong to the Dharma lineage. Obviously. Now that is over. That has gone by. Now we have come to Adharma lineage. So, one guy is left out. His name is Uttanapada. So, he is our important person here. He belongs to the Adharma lineage. He is not a very bad guy, but some Adharma is there in him. And so, he fits into this Adharma lineage. Dhruva also comes in this lineage only, but he is the one who conquers Adharma. But he is also the victim of Adharma. We will see in this story. But he rises above Adharma, he sees Adharma in his life, and then he takes the advice of the Swayambhuva Manu, the grandfather, and rises above Adharma, and therefore he is the example for us. But still, he comes in the context of Adharma lineage only. Now you see this name Uttanapada, what an interesting name. Suppose you come across a gentleman. Suppose I sit here in this chair and keep both legs on this table. That is what is called Uttanapadaha. Pada is feet, are kept above the head level or equal to the heart level. Pada should be below. Heart is here, head above, and pada below. Either you sit cross-legged or maybe you sit in a chair. But lift the feet like this and put on the table. That presents a very, very unhappy, undesirable sitting posture. And suppose somebody opens the door and walks in, some good man or even a Mahatma may open the door and walk in. So what is it that appears to him? Two feet move, put up, they appear. The person doesn't appear because the person is hidden behind those feet. And so he has to look above the feet or beyond the feet and then try to find out who is that guy. It is a very inappropriate way of sitting, keeping the feet on the table. I don't know. At home, one can do that. I am not sure. Our elders were not doing that. Either sit cross-legged on the mat, or maybe they sit in a wooden chair or some chair, and when it is time to sleep, they sleep horizontal. And not this kind of half vertical, half horizontal, like a botasana kind of thing. And so keep the feet on the table. That is Uttanapada. Uttanapada. By the time you know his name, now you know what kind of a person he is. Already he fits into Adharma lineage in a small way. And he is the one. Jaye Uttanapadasya Suniti Suruchistayoho Suruchif Preyasi Patyuhu Netarayat Suto Dhruvaha. This gentleman, Uttanapada, he is a polygamist. He married twice. First he married and had a son. He married a good woman, Suniti. You need a bad woman also, you know, Adharma Vamshavali. Bad woman means not any bad intrinsically, but behaving wrongly in a given situation. In that sense, there is nothing like bad or evil. a given situation, misled by some wrong notion and making a mistake. That is, and then realizing the mistake also, like Kaikeyi in Ramayana. So he married a wonderful lady, and her name is Suniti, all good Niti. Niti is morals. She has all the sterling qualities of a great housewife. He married her. And then she gave birth to a son. His name is Dhruvaha. He is our hero, Kathanayakaha. Okay, he married her, already got a son by her, so he should live a happy life with her. And now his age is also going, progressing, you know. He is not as young as he was 10 years back when he was married first. So, but then he belongs to the Sutta, the Sadharma Vamshavalihi, so he married a second time. Now he is already middle-aged or above middle-age, closer to old age, and now he married a young lady. What we call vruddhasya taruni visham. A vruddha, an elderly person, marrying a young lady, it is the greatest injury to him, not to her, to him. That is how they say. It could be injury to her also in a different way, but she just can't handle her. Because she is very young and in her prime of youth, and this man is in the setting of his life, and so it's a wrong combination. But why should she marry him? Because he is rich and he is powerful, he is the king, and still in some kind of an age, so it's a good bet from her side. And therefore, she good bargain from her side, so she married him. Her name is Suruchihi. So, she has all the good tastes. She wears good dresses, she wears good ornaments. She plays the role of a rich and powerful guy very effectively. That's why she is a very worldly woman. Her name is Suruchihi. So now he is married to her. So now it is the formula for disaster that has this kind of a description. We will continue with this tomorrow. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hrihi Om Tat Sat Shri Krishna Arpanamastu. So it's a long time quarter.